take 10 divisions of ground troops. And these planes, so essential to our own safety... Go on. ...would be a far better defense of Europe. The American people will start no war. But the sure defense of London, New York, Paris... ...is the fear of counterattack on Moscow from the air. The Kremlin will not be very much frightened over American ground war against their overwhelming forces. In that area of military menace, they have the initiative. It's on their side today. Some time ago, when just as a mere civilian, I proposed this alternative national program of less armies and an overwhelming striking force at less cost, a yell went up, especially from Washington, that here comes the armchair strategist. Well, promptly that proposal was supported by several of our most distinguished retired Army, Navy, and Air officers. It was supported by 6 of our most seasoned diplomats. Such a program would restore the advantage of military initiative to our side. It would extend our effectiveness to aid all menaced countries. It would assure American youth that their lives will not be widely interrupted and that they will not be sent into overwhelming communist quicksands. It would enable us to stop this creeping fascism and socialism. It would balance our budget and start us to cut our taxes. It would avoid the bankruptcy which is Stalin's greatest hope. It has been said that in evil these evil times, peace can be preserved only through strength. That is true. But the center and final reserve of strength of the free world lies now in the Western Hemisphere. I am not ashamed to say that our first duty is to defend the United States. Freedom of men falls in the whole world. Now what I propose is an entire reconsideration of these policies based on the realities which have today developed both in the United States and abroad. You will need to change administrations to do that. I do not propose that we retreat into our shell like a turtle. I do propose the deadly reprisal strategy of a rattlesnake. The way out from these perils, begotten from this 12 years of lost statesmanship, is not easy. Certainly, sane policies cannot be made amid college yells of isolationist and internationalist, nor smears and slanted news, which are all of them the ugly instruments of those who would dictate. The the Republican Party must not blink the fact that there are many other difficulties in the times and there are many other tasks before us. Our party welcomes change in the social and economic order when it will produce a more fair, a more free, a more satisfying civilization. But change which destroys the safeguards of free men and women will simply be apples of Sodom. I have great sympathy for those who honestly seek for shortcuts to solve our complex problems. I have often said, the structure of government can only be built brick upon brick by men and women free in spirit and free in mind. The bricks must come from the mold of religious faith, of justice, of integrity, of fidelity to the spirit of the Constitution. Any other mold is distorted, and the bricks will be without straw. Now, this election may be the last chance for the survival of freedom in America. In a time of confusion and crisis, the action of a Republican convention, as you well know, 92 years ago, saved this nation for free men. The Whig Party temporized with the issue, and it died, and it deserved to disappear. Shall the Republican Party receive or deserve any better fate if it compromises upon the issue of freedom for all men, white as well as black? If you make free men your issue, you can again revive the call which your and my ancestors issued that 92 years ago. Also, you were right, there was a convention in 1776. Their declaration stirred the world with its ringing appeal for free men, its righteous recital of transgressions, and its pledge of life, fortune, and sacred honor. America needs today a new declaration that will raise the hearts of our people to their spiritual purpose and their eyes into the sunlight of freedom. The first sentence of that declaration should read, "The Republican Party is determined to restore free men in the United States." That declaration really leads little more to revive again the hope in a frustrated people. That is your issue. Yours is the task to stop this retreat, to lead the attack and recapture the citadels of liberty, for thus can America be preserved. Thus can it hold the lamp of free men aloft to a confused world, and thus can we wipe out coercion and corruption. Thus can peace and security be reestablished and expanded. Thus can the opportunity and the spiritual future of your children be guaranteed. And thus you will win the gratitude of posterity and the blessing of the Almighty God. In my opening remarks, I stated that from the inexorable force of nature, this is most likely the last time I will have the honor to attend your convention. Therefore, in closing, in closing this occasion, I wish to express my deep gratitude to this great party which you represent, for the many honors that you have bestowed upon me. If I have won some measure of your affections, it is a high award. But the greatest glory that can come to man is to be given the opportunity to fight for free men. I will continue that fight. And I shall fight for those principles which made the United States the greatest gift of God to free men. I pray to him to strengthen your hands and to give you courage. Thank you.
Above the convention floor. There, I believe, ladies and gentlemen, was the greatest speech given in his life by Herbert Hoover. They're pouring out in the aisles now. The first placard out was Iowa, followed immediately by California, the home state of Herbert Hoover. All the California delegation already from their seats, and the entire 48 states are now going out onto the floor and marching around with their placards and their signs and waving American flags. Again, I say, in all humility, in my opinion, that was the greatest speech that Herbert Hoover ever delivered, that I have ever heard anyway. They're cheering and waving their signs, their state signs, and their placards of Earl Warren, Ike, and Taft, all in terms of a generous outpouring for this leader of the Republican Party. Now down to the platform and Morgan Beatty.
And here we can see the demonstration a little better because we can see the flags under the state signs. They're gathering the state signs up close to the platform so the former president can see each of them. And he waves at each sign as it goes by. I see American flags, literally hundreds and hundreds of them. People waving them harder and harder as they get under the platform. And he's waving his hand to the balcony. Now back to the NBC booth.
In the booth here, and listening closely to the entire speech, was H.B. Kaltenborn. I'd like to hear your report on Mr. Herbert Hoover's speech.
I agree with you, George, that it was probably the finest speech that Herbert Hoover has ever made. I have listened to quite a number of those that he has made at conventions, and I would say that this was the best. The best because of the serious character of the issues involved. The best because, in one sense, it was truly American and non-partisan. Obviously, he has a definite point of view, but he expressed it in a way that could give offense to no one. And here is the parade, the only one that we shall see in this convention, where the banners and names of every candidate are waved in enthusiastic encomium upon a magnificent address. Back to George Hicks.
This is the second night of the Republican National Convention in Chicago, presented as a public service by Philco. We'll return here just in a moment, but now 30 seconds for station identification.
This is Billings, KGHL, the Northwestern Auto Supply Company station. Another shipment of aluminum casseroles. 1-quart capacity Pyrex liner just arrived for July specials. Only $2.99 in the Hard Albin gift department, main floor. Downtown Billings temperature, 76 degrees.
Raging down on the floor with a band flaring, straw hats waving, and the state signs all lifted and being tossed about. And Mr. Hoover is standing there at the speaker's dais, smiling and waving his hand, but a man of 77, mostly standing still, simply smiling. Bob Murphy, this is a sight to see that I think you'll long remember. Now let's have just a word from you for Philco.
All right, George. Ladies and gentlemen, the Philco Corporation is bringing you the entire radio coverage of this, the 25th Republican National Convention. Certified tests prove it. Mrs. America's favorite refrigerator is Philco with the Dairy Bar. 3-1 over the next leading brand. And it's no wonder either. Philco's new refrigerators bring you a brand new contribution to door storage design. The Philco Dairy Bar with a cheese keeper. Right at your fingertips, you have extra front row storage for the foods you use most often. No wonder it's America's favorite by 3-1 choice. It's the world's only Dairy Bar refrigerator, yours only from Philco. Famous for quality the world over. Well, the demonstration continues down on the floor of the convention hall apace, and our remote units are down there, and here again is George Hicks.
The band is playing Iowa, Iowa, that's where the tall corn grows. Of course, Mr. Hoover was born in the state of Iowa. Let's go right down onto the floor to Merrill Muller.
One's growing again, and it's all over the floor now. The first one, as you may have remembered, only took part down around the delegate section. This one now is also going back into the orator section. It is bigger than the first, and everyone here is just bubbling with enthusiasm. Now, George, I'd like to make a point here, which I'd like to call to H.E. Kaltenborn's attention. You notice Mr. Hoover's speech spoke of freeing the men of America, free men in America. I'd like to say this with all due respect, and also it's an indication of perhaps their hopes this November. That's a line borrowed from Winston Churchill's last campaign in England. You remember when he said, set the people free, and he won with that one? Well, perhaps Mr. Hoover has given this convention the victory theme for this year's election battle. Now back to George Hicks and Booth.
The band blaring away, great day now. Senator Bricker, Gabrielson, and Mr. Hallinan all crowding about Mr. Hoover on the speaker's platform. Now again, down to the floor, and Chaplin.
Down over on my side of the hall, this demonstration looks to be just as enthusiastic, just as wild, perhaps a little more so than the first one, the earlier one when former President Hoover first came to the rostrum. He's standing up there now, smiling, evidently very moved. The people down here are just going wild. They're marching around, carrying the banners. Several men have picked up young ladies. They're carrying them around on their shoulders. Delegations and marching around. There are hundreds of American flags waving. Standards of all the presidential candidates for nomination are being carried along. Now, the thing is still going on. It's been running almost 10 minutes. We'll return you now to George Hicks.
Mr. Hoover still waiting and looking at the demonstration. Now let's just turn all the microphones on and listen to the floor. Again, that is a real demonstration of affection, a feeling from the heart, from a man who said he may never appear before you again. Mr. Hallinan has called for order while they're galloping around the floor. Down to the rostrum now, and to Mr. Gabrielson, Chairman of the Republican National Committee.
It is my honor and pleasure now to present to President Hoover the gold badge of this convention.
In the booth again, Mr. Hoover holding up that emblem and the great cheer from the crowd. It's most touching, a man who said in his speech at the beginning and at the end that this may be his last appearance before the party that he served so loyally all his life. Now, H.B. Kaltenborn, let's talk a little about the speech. It was a long one, and I think you have many things to tell us about it.
Yes, of course. A speech like that, one could occupy as much time in analyzing it as Mr. Hoover took to deliver it. I thought it was significant that the greatest applause, the longest continued applause, came when he said, "I am not ashamed to say that our first duty is to defend the United States." Now, someone might call that a statement of an isolationist, but obviously he didn't mean it that way, and he further amplified it to show that that was not what he had in mind. But he does believe that unless We defend the United States against bankruptcy, against overextension, against false emphasis on ground forces, as against air and naval forces and weapons, that unless we do that, we cannot do our duty to the free world, and we cannot save it by any means. So that you have there a reasonable argument from the standpoint of a man who is very wise in his estimate of what is necessary for this country. I see him now going back from the platform, and as the crowd sees that, it cheers him again, and he has to stop and wave his hand once more. He's surrounded by all the dignitaries on the platform, by the leading police officials who guided him there. He is shaking hands right and left, and in a moment, he will have disappeared. Even the pressmen are applauding him from both sides, and that is unusual because the press is hard-boiled and does not give its applause easily. But everyone feels that this man is a truly great man who has delivered a truly great address. Back to George Hicks.
I want to turn quickly now down to the entrance again to Jim Hurlbut.
We're down here just behind the platform, behind the picture of Abraham Lincoln. Everybody is standing by here waiting for this great American, Mr. Herbert Hoover, to come out. And I'm going to put it back to George Hicks for just a moment now.
He didn't go out of the platform. He's still at the back of the platform, shaking hands with the various personages and leaders of the party. It's a quiet scene on the platform, for these are all famous people. Yes, he's sitting down now. He's going to sit on the platform. Mr. Hoover will stay for the next address, which will end tonight's session, the address of Governor Howard Pyle of Arizona. He's not leaving the floor at all. He's going to stay to the end of the session. A man aged 77 years old. Here's the gavel now from temporary chairman Hallinan.
Delegates, will please take your seats.
Microphone on again here in the booth while the delegates are going to their chairs again. The rapping for order was in order to present the next speaker. We're craning our necks to see Herbert Hoover again. He's away at the back of the platform under our booth itself. The delegates are now getting into their seats again, and I fear that some of them are going out of the hall. They've had a long evening here already, and a great deal of energy spent, and I suppose they're going out to the soft drink stands and to talk to each other for a moment before coming back to the final speech.
Mrs. Wirtz, to present to the convention the report of the Committee on Permanent Organization.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen of the convention, I have the honor to present the report of the Committee on Permanent Organization. Your committee recommends for permanent chairman of the convention the Honorable Joseph W. Martin, Jr. of Massachusetts. Your committee also recommends the election of the honorary vice presidents of this convention, whose names have been submitted by the states and territories to the secretary of the convention. We further recommend that the temporary secretary and other temporary officers be made permanent officers of the convention. I move that the recommendations of this committee be adopted.
You've heard the motion of the Committee on Permanent Organization as presented by the delegate from Colorado. Is there a second to the motion? All in favor of the adoption of the report of the committee will indicate by saying aye. Contrary, no. And Congressman Joseph Martin is unanimously elected as permanent chairman of this Republican convention.
These are routine adoptions of the business of the convention, necessary business which must be carried out, the Committee on Permanent Organization, besides naming the permanent chairman who will handle the actual balloting, which will name the nominee for president and vice president, also names many honorary vice presidents, one from each state and the territories, and that is an honor indeed from your party. Joe Martin of Massachusetts is now the permanent chairman. Joseph Martin will address the convention on Wednesday night, tomorrow night. He was scheduled for tonight, but he did not make his address because the convention itself is not a permanent organization without the final contested seats being decided. And now the chairman has moved away from the lectern. There's music singing from the back of the convention hall from the other platform. But here, just for a moment, let's have a word for Philco from Bob Murphy.
Well, as you mentioned a moment ago, George, the delegates have taken a break here. There's a little music being offered, a little respite from the great emotional crisis that occurred when Mr. Hoover gave, as you and H.B. Kaltenborn have agreed, the finest address that he ever made in his public life.
Yes, Bob, and I might say that the delegates, I think, have been waiting to give vent to their Republican feelings, and this was the first chance they had. And it was a wholehearted chance. It was a very generous chance for the man that's been their leader and their spokesman for so long, an aged man who, as he said, may make his last speech here tonight to any Republican convention.
And to which they all disagreed very thoroughly.
Yes, I noticed that, too. He's only 77 years young, as they say.
He looks very fit, I might say. The Philco Corporation, ladies and gentlemen, celebrating its 60th anniversary as a leader of American in American industry, is bringing you this complete, and I think we can say in all seriousness, the most complete radio coverage of a national political convention, the first of the national conventions, the Republican convention here in Chicago from the International Amphitheater. You know, you'll spend less, but you'll live better when you have a new Philco home freezer. The new, amazingly different Philco models are spacious, store hundreds of pounds of frozen foods. And Philco's exclusive sloping front design stores 70% of those frozen foods above your knee level. Now, that's true convenience in freezer design, brought to you by Philco in both the 8 and 12 and a half cubic foot sizes. What's more, a Philco freezer is equipped with easy lift storage baskets. You can store or find foods in a matter of seconds. And for a touch of extra beauty, there's sparkling Key Largo color inside your Philco freezer. So get one now and start saving on the foods you buy. Eat what you want in any season. Prepare your meals with far less work. It's really a wonderful convenience. It's like having a food store in your own kitchen when you have a wonderfully convenient new home freezer from Philco. Famous for quality the world over. George, during the demonstrations, did you notice down there, I believe it's the Oregon delegation, which is the first on the right there.
Yes, that's right at the first center aisle there, right at the front of it.
They have a gentleman with the Paul Bunyan beard and dressed in a some kind of a fur breech clout there who has been carrying on in great style, I noticed.
That's the caveman that was described from the floor by one of our reporters, a Neolithic man who is covered with Ike signs. That's a Taft sarcasm, meaning that the cave people want Ike only.
George, there's another little footnote I noticed down here. There are hundreds, really hundreds, of newspaper reporters from all the press services and many newspapers in various cities throughout the country. But there's one gentleman down there, George, among the shirt-sleeved reporters of the working press, who is dressed in a black tie and a tuxedo tonight. You see him right down there?
No, I can't say that. I've been watching Mr. Hoover more. He must be from one of the older countries. The man singing in the white jacket, incidentally, across the way, Bob, is Gene Archer now, a singer from NBC that we're very proud is here in the hall tonight. In fact, he's from station WRC in Washington, where I used to work. So this is a good thing for NBC that we have our best talent here. H.B. Kaltenborn, with the speaker's dais empty for the moment and the delegates walking around as the entertainment comes to them, would you care to make any comment further about Mr. Hoover's talk and possibly in respect to General MacArthur the night before?
Well, naturally, one has heard two important speeches covering, to some extent, the same topics, the errors of the administration and our policy, particularly in Korea. Now, the thing that strikes me here by way of comparison is that Mr. Hoover had a constructive program That is, he showed the way out. He had a plan. Whereas General MacArthur contented himself by demonstrating the mistakes that had been made, to which Mr. Hoover also referred, but did not come forward with a definite program. And to that extent, of course, the Hoover speech was by far the greater speech, a speech that ends on a constructive note, that offers a way out, always has the advantage over one that views with alarm, but does not present a complete program.
Well, as speakers ourselves, it seemed to me that Mr. Hoover was more eloquent, or I don't know how to describe it, but he did it better.
Well, let me try and analyze it a bit. General MacArthur had a monotonous style. That is, after a while, you got a little tired of it because it was the same cadence and the same rise and fall.
Yes.
Mr. Hoover's style had variety. Occasionally, he ad-libbed. There was a sense of humor in it, and perhaps that was the chief difference. There was more general humanity, more humor, more aspiration, and in a sense, more optimism. And I think that is why the response from the audience was greater to the Hoover speech than it was to the MacArthur speech. And by the way, I'm not minimizing the MacArthur speech. It was an important declaration, and as speeches go, it was certainly of high order. But Mr. Hoover's speech, given the added prestige and power, was even better, even greater.
Chairman Hallinan is now introducing our next speaker, whose words we will hear in just a moment. He is Governor Howard Pyle of Arizona. The young governor, 44 years old, who is the first Republican governor of that state in 20 years. And incidentally, he's the program director of an NBC station, KTAR, at Phoenix, Arizona. And now the words of Governor Pyle of Arizona.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and a special word of thanks to my friends from Arizona who are here in the delegation tonight enjoying all of the enthusiastic splendor and excitement of this marvelous night and this marvelous convention. A special greeting to the radio audience throughout America tonight.